now in session. Judge Cochran, Judge Bryan, Judge Gaitas, the Honorable Jean M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. Just take a quick minute here to get set up, and then we'll be ready to go. So, welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We're delighted to be hearing oral arguments in person here today. We have five cases on our calendar today, three oral cases and two non-oral cases. And just for the recording, today is April 27th, 2022. The first case on our calendar today is A21-1426. Kristen Glaros Hansen et al. Versus CBS Construction Services et al. Each party will have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. We'll ask that you please identify yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument. You should be able to see the timer on the podium in the middle there. And with that, counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Mr. Moore, my name is Brandon Schwartz. I'll be arguing on behalf of the appellants today. The district court abuses its discretion, as it did here, when it bases its decision on an erroneous view of the law, or when it renders a decision that is contrary to the facts in the record. I think what is of utmost importance in this case is that, as it relates to the disqualification and my representation of CBS, is Ms. Hansen filed a singular declaration, notwithstanding that this matter came up before this court before and was then remanded. And if you look, it's document number 21. It was a declaration dated November 21st of 2019. And there are two pivotal sentences in that declaration that I believe, and we respectfully assert, require reversing the district court. The first is in paragraph 4 of her declaration, in which she says, quote, specifically, we discuss forming a separate business relationship unrelated to CBS. And here she's referring to the difference between Midwest Investment Services and CBS, specifically acknowledging that they're different and unrelated. In paragraph 5, she also states, quote, Bestuel and I continue to discuss ideas and opportunities for starting a separate business relationship for us to earn additional income outside of our employment relationship through CBS. So even using her own declaration, she acknowledges the separateness and distinctness of MIS and CBS.
Mr. Schwartz, maybe you can analyze that in light of the previous decision from this court.
Thank you, Your Honor, and I know you were on that decision too. So the when Your Honor sent it back for a remand, is it related to additional fact-finding on the CBS relationship? The question is, was there a substantial relationship between my prior representation of Ms. Hansen in her current claims against CBS. The district court did not find that.
Right, but it, to the extent that those sentences from the declaration are important, I'm assuming that your argument would say that they were still important when this case was on appeal the first time, and wouldn't this argument that you're making also apply to what we affirmed the last time?
Well,
in other words, aren't you, by making that argument, aren't you asking us to come to a different conclusion with respect to CBS than we did the first time?
No, Your Honor, because the first time there was no facts as it related to CBS, and that's why this court
sent it back. But the facts that were in there that related to, is it Bustel?
Bestial.
Bestial?
Yeah.
The facts that were in there as related to Bestial still had to analyze the relationship and whether there's a substantial relationship. And it seemed to me that those two sentences, and that's what I'm asking, how can you explain how your reliance on those two sentences today is not also or necessarily asking this court to come to an inconsistent conclusion if those two sentences would relate to the substantial relationship between, I guess, with Bushdell?
I don't think, yeah, I understand the question, and thank you, Your Honor. I don't think so because the scope of the appeal the first time around was entirely related to the MIS issue. The court, the district court, didn't even touch on the CBS issue or any substantial relationship at all between the relationship. The entirety of that first appeal was just focused on six transactions or occurrences in which the district court found were substantial in my representation of her as it related to the formation of MIS. What is missing, though, is that link between any allegation or any finding of fact that any of that representation has anything to do with her claims against CBS, let alone a substantial relationship. There is none. And if you look at the claim...
Counsel, as I understand your argument then, you're saying the matter is not substantially related because there wasn't any legal advice relating to CBS. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And where do you find support for that view in either the rule or the case law? Because the rule has broader language, and the comment to the rule has broader language.
The Rule 1.9 in the Swanson case, both talk about a substantial relationship between the representation and the claim, that the issues involved are essentially the same transaction, the same legal dispute. The district court did not find that. Instead, what the district court found, and I think if this court adopts it, it's a rewriting of that analysis, that conflict of interest analysis. The district court found that her claims related to MIS and Mr. Bestial are closely related in time to her claims against CBS. That's not what the test is. The test is...
In the 3M case, it specifically says on page 816, a party seeking disqualification of opposing counsel under Rule 1.9A must establish 1, 2, and 3. And 3 is, the present lawsuit is substantially related to a matter in which opposing counsel previously represented the moving party. So it doesn't say the claims against the party must be substantially related. It says the present lawsuit.
I think that, Your Honor, though, I think that ignores the separateness and distinctness of MIS and CBS. CBS and MIS have separate ownership groups. They have separate purposes. That's not disputed. That's in the record. They have... MIS was a single-purpose investment entity, whereas CBS is a construction company. So the test has never been whether claims are closely connected with each other. The test has always been whether there was a substantial relationship between the representation and the claim. And if when we look at the claims that she has raised against CBS, breach of contract, failure to pay wages, failure to pay commissions, violations of the Whistleblower Act, employment discrimination, promissory estoppel, unjust enrichment, a litany of claims. But none of them have anything to do, and she does not say that I provided her any representation related to any of those claims with CBS. In fact,
isn't the test, right? You know, when you look at the comment, too, to Rule 1.9, it says matters are substantially related for purposes of this rule if they involve the same transaction or legal dispute, or if there is otherwise a substantial risk that confidential factual information, as would normally have been obtained in the prior representation, would materially advance the client's position in the subsequent matter. So it doesn't say there has to be legal advice relating to the claims at issue in the present case. It's enough if they involve the same transaction. So under the comment to the rule and as specified in the Swanson case.
But there was no, there. I had nothing to do with any transaction related to her and CBS, and she doesn't allege otherwise.
Well, but there's an allegation that the relating to the funding piece and CBS's involvement in that.
And when you read her declaration, she doesn't claim that I had anything to do with that. She claims that her and Mr. Bestuel told me that this is how this transaction was going to be set up. I had nothing to do with that, Your Honor. And
doesn't the fact that you're standing in front of us today essentially testifying to facts, doesn't that illustrate the conflict that might be apparent?
I don't think so, Your Honor. What I'm arguing on is her declaration and the lack thereof.
Well, you're disputing it based on your own personal experience.
No, I'm not disputing it, Your Honor. I'm saying that based on her own declaration, she doesn't say that I told her how to do this. She says, we told Schwartz we were going to set this up. She doesn't say that I gave her any advice related to it. And on the confidential
information... But doesn't that indicate that it involves the same transaction? I mean, the standard is whether it involves the same transaction. That's one way to find that they're substantially related. Would you agree with that?
I don't agree that that's the issue in this case, because she doesn't argue that that transaction should not have occurred.
But when you look at the district court's order, I think it examined that and concluded, you know, on page 5 of the addendum that it did involve the same transaction.
But she doesn't premise any claim in this case on that transaction. She doesn't say that the check should not have gone from CBS to MIS. She doesn't say that she should not have been gifted this membership. She bases no claim in this lawsuit based on that transaction. It's not at issue in this lawsuit. And the argument that I am somehow a potential witness also flips the case law on its head. It has to be a necessary witness, the only witness that can testify about those facts. Well, she acknowledges that there's basis her argument on one call between the three of us. Her and Mr. Bestuel can both testify on those facts. There's nothing in there that is confidential when there's two other parties involved that can talk about it. And her affidavit makes no argument that she disclosed anything to me related to CBS, the claims that she has against CBS, or any defenses of CBS. So I think to adopt the district court's rationale here is to rewrite the conflict of interest analysis. The district court did no analysis as it relates to Rule of Professional Conduct 3.7 and being a necessary witness. Instead, just said that, well, I'm a potential witness, but didn't go through that entire analysis that's required by the rule.
If I could jump on and ask a question about that, would it be appropriate, you think, for this court to then remand again and ask for the district court to address that portion?
I think that that is an option. I think that the better option is to reverse it, but I think that's certainly an option, is that there was no analysis done on that 3.7a necessary versus potential. I mean, I looked through the case law. There's no case law that says it's a potential witness. It's a necessary witness, that this is the only way you can get that fact or document into evidence.
But, counsel, as you know, the district court didn't cite Rule 3.7. It was relying on Rule 1.9, correct? And it seems to me the district court was really examining the witness question as relevant to whether the same transaction was involved here, not in terms of whether you would need to be disqualified as a necessary witness.
I think that that's part of the problem with the order, is that it's unclear as to whether she was seeking disqualification under 1.9 in that call, or under 3.7 in being a necessary witness. I read the order as saying that she says, well, the claims are closely related, doesn't find that there was a substantial relationship between my representation or claims of CBS, and then we have this call that, well, maybe he's a potential witness on it. She didn't do any analysis under 3.7a, and I think that's part of the problem with the order, and that there was an erroneous view of the law and based on facts that aren't in the record, because when you look at the detail of that call is all related to MIS. And the formation of MIS, none of that's at issue in the lawsuit. She doesn't allege that it shouldn't have been formed. So there's no relationship, let alone a substantial relationship.
Mr. Schwartz, one thing that I struggle with a little bit is simply the relationship between Mr. Bestuel and CBS. You know, these are an individual and an entity that are almost one and the same, and I'm wondering if you could address that part of it.
So at the time of all of this, Mr. Bestrule was a part owner of CBS, which is the construction company, and a half owner of MIS.
I understand the relationship, but if there's a conflict as to representing Mr. Bestrule, shouldn't we scrutinize the conflict as to CBS really carefully? Because they can't be fully separated.
Sure. I appreciate the question. I think that Your Honor, though, would ignore that we look under Minnesota law, we view corporations separate and distinct from shareholders. I mean, that's part of why we have veil piercing law, that you have to show that they basically treat themselves one and the same. That's not alleged here. They are different entities. They have different purposes. They have different employees. They have a whole litany of different pieces here.
Right, but so, Mr. Schwartz, this gets back to my first question, right? This court's already determined, or I should say affirmed the determination that they're, regarding the disqualification of your representation of Bestrule, saying that your previous representation of Hansen was substantially related to the current lawsuit. So that determination that we've already affirmed once, I guess, to put it more precisely, doesn't that bind, or how do you distinguish that from the representation of CBS, your representation of CBS? How was your representation of Bestrule different from your representation of CBS? Because we've already determined that there's a substantial relationship.
I think you have to look at the claims, Your Honor. The claims here against CBS are employment-related claims. The claims against Mr. Bestrule are member claims. They have different...
Well, to be fair, they're not all employment-related claims, the claims against CBS.
All of her claims against CBS stem from her employment relationship. There are no claims against CBS that are unrelated to her employment relationship. The claims against MIS are what are related to the ownership, the investment opportunity. And I...
Isn't there an unjust enrichment claim and...
whistleblower.
Another claim that doesn't specify that it's necessarily employment-related, promissory estoppel?
May I answer? I know my time's up. Can I answer that question?
You may. Thank
okay.
you.
I think when you read the complaint, the amended complaint as a whole, what those claims are arguing is that if the court finds that there is not a contract, that we have an employment contract, that CBS has been unjustly enriched through my labors as an employee. So I don't think that when you read the amended complaint as a whole, you can say that those claims are somehow outside of the scope of her employment relationship. She doesn't say that she did some other service unrelated to her services as an employee of CBS.
Okay, thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Steve Moore, and I represent the respondent, Kristen Glaros Hansen. I'd just like to pick up with... where we left off, or where Mr. Schwartz left off, and that's the complaint itself. Each
and
one,
specifically the promissory estoppel and unjust enrichment claims, which were brought against both
exactly
Bestrule and CBS.
Exactly. So they're both a party to those two counts, but then every other count in the 11 count complaint and all the facts that relate to those counts involve Mr. Bestrule. Each and every one of them, even the CBS claims that they're saying, well, that's an employment employment claim, so, you know, there's some separation, if you will. Mr. Bestrule is the one making those decisions that give rise to those counts. Mr. Bestrule refused to pay the commissions. Mr. Bestrule refused to pay the bonuses under the contract. Each one of the counts are there because of the conduct of Mr. Bestrule. It's absolutely inseparable, this complaint. CBS and Mr. Bestrule in this complaint.
But what about
go ahead.
I was just trying to get you to address the promissory estoppel and unjust enrichment claims a little bit separate from this employment relationship, because that's the way Mr. Schwartz is arguing, that those two claims are distinct. And so maybe you can explain in your view how the previous decision of this court affirming the determination of a substantial relationship when we're examining the representation of Mr. Bestrule versus the representation of Ms. Hansen, how that determination on those two counts affect our analysis of the relationship or the representation between Mr. Schwartz and CBS today.
Okay, those two counts relate to the, if there is not a contract between Ms. Glaros Hansen and CBS. And so Mr. Bestel is making these promises. We will pay you the commissions. We will pay you the bonus. We'll pay you the salary, that type of those types of facts. Both the promissory estoppel and the unjust enrichment are based upon that, the lack of a contract. They're, if you have a contract, you can't have those two claims. So they're in there really covering a situation where there is no contract. And again, Mr. Bestel is the one that's responsible, or that's committed the conduct, or that's engaged in the conduct that's given rise to those claims. It also has to do with...
And in those claims, is there any other individual that is alleged to be speaking on behalf of CBS?
No. There is a CFO, and I'll address that, I guess. Mr. Schwartz said that MIS and CBS are completely different companies, and that we have in Minnesota a company, a corporation, is separate from the shareholders. That's a legal fiction, especially in this case. You've got Mr. Bestel, who's the CEO of CBS. He's the majority shareholder of CBS. He's also a 50% shareholder of MIS. And as the CEO and majority shareholder of CBS, he's the one driving the litigation, not only for himself, but for CBS. So whoever is going to represent CBS is going to take direction from Mr. Bestel. Just the way it is. So you cannot separate those two. And the court, or the district court, went through that analysis where we talk about the overlap of factual and legal issues. And that's in that 3M case. That's what the court's to look at. Is there an overlap here? There's a significant overlap. In fact, they're so overlapped, they're so intertwined that they can't be separated, the facts and the legal issues in this case.
So does the declaration of Ms. Glaros Hansen support that argument? In other words, appellant argues that the declaration doesn't relate to CBS at all.
Well, he's pulling out one paragraph out of that declaration. And what that paragraph is talking about, it's talking about specifically what is MIS and what happened with MIS. And it's not, again, it's that paragraph is not relating to CBS. That is true. But that doesn't mean there are no facts that show CBS, MIS, Bestel, and Ms. Glaros Hansen to all be intertwined in this case. The district court went through that analysis, page 4 and 5 of the decision, and goes right through it and says Ms. Glaros Hansen brings this Richfield project to Mr. Bestel. CBS is going to be the general contractor on the Richfield project. CBS is going to fund the Richfield project is going to pay a development fee to CBS, which in turn is going to use that as the investment for Glaros Hansen and Bestel in MIS. It is so locked together that you just can't separate this. And the district court went through that analysis, and it's based on the record. Those facts are in the record, and it's not an abuse of discretion.
Is
the district court's part.
The question of whether Mr. Schwartz might need to be a witness, is that critical to the district court's analysis? In other words, if you set that aside, is there still enough in the district court's order to support your view that the district court didn't abuse its discretion when it concluded that the matters are substantially related?
Yes, you can set that aside. That's, to me, that's one of these relevant circumstances that the court went through, an additional relevant circumstance. The district court, that was about the third paragraph in the district court's analysis. And it talks about he's a likely witness or he's a potential witness. Again, that analysis that the district court went through is not under 3.7A. That's not why Mr. Schwartz is being disqualified or why his firm is being disqualified. He's being disqualified because of the overall substantial relation between everybody in this case. They're just inseparable. So it's another relevant circumstance for showing that there is this overlap of factual and legal issues.
Should Should the analysis be focused on whether there was legal advice given related to the CVS claims?
No, I don't think that has anything to do with it. That's not in any of the cases where it has to be so narrow as to give legal advice to Glaros Hansen about CBS or something along those lines. I think that's his argument. There's nothing in the case law or the statute that says that, or the rule that says that. That's another argument that he makes to try to separate it. Just like he tries to say, well, each one of the seven counts against CBS is just against CBS. But again, each one of those seven counts against CBS are there because of conduct that Mr. Bestel engaged in. And he is not allowed to represent Mr. Bestel. And as I said before, whoever represents CBS is going to be taking direction from Mr. Bestel. And so he should not be allowed to represent CBS for that reason.
You would agree, though, that some of the alleged conduct doesn't really relate to MIS.
That's true. That's true. There are the employment claims, the failure to pay commissions, those types of claims. That does. I'm sorry, you said MIS?
Well,
or CBS?
MIS.
Yeah. No, that's true. But they do relate, or they are there because of Mr. Bestel. And so when a lawyer is going to be representing CBS, who are they going to talk to? Who are they going to have that relationship with, that attorney-client relationship? Now, technically, it's with the corporation, but practically, it's with Mr. Bestel, and we know that. And I'd just like to address Your Honor's comment about remanding the case.
Yeah, please.
I prefer that it's not remanded.
But you'd agree that those factors, those components, when it comes to confidentiality, that analysis, that the district court didn't address that fully. The necessary witness?
The necessary witness?
Yeah.
Yeah, the district court did not go through that, but I don't think that's necessary for the conclusion that the district court rendered. Again, this is an abuse of discretion standard. We look at the record. Are there facts in the record that support the district court's conclusion? There are absolutely facts in the record that support the district
court's
conclusion.
Right, but if we disagreed with that when it comes to the substantial relationship under, 1.9, there's still, that doesn't end the potential disqualification. We would just need to then address what is not present in the district court's order, and perhaps we're looking at a remand on that in that circumstance. Is that the way you would see it as well?
No, I don't think there needs to be a remand. You're talking about...
I'm saying if we disagreed with your analysis of the substantial relationship and we have a choice between remanding for further findings regarding confidentiality reversing and not giving the district court, I guess this would be a third opportunity to make findings on this motion. Given that choice, you would agree, I guess, given who you represent, that we should remand for further findings again?
Yes, given that choice, Your Honor. I would agree with that. Was there any questions? Well, I guess one last thing. The National Texture Corporation case, it says if there's even an appearance of a conflict, the attorney should not represent the party. We have more than an appearance in this case. We have facts, as the district court found, that there is conflict, there are conflicts, there's overlap, there is Mr. Bestel intimately involved in every claim. So,
counsel, that's an older case that I think predates the current rule. So is that case still instructive?
It's instructive, for sure. With that, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. I believe that the argument that you can't separate these two entities runs directly contrary to her own declaration that I read to you at the start of this that says that these are separate business relationships unrelated to each other. And when you look at the test, the 3M test, about whether two matters are substantially related, we analyze the extent to which the factual and legal issues in the two representations overlap. There was no legal issue or representation to Ms. Hansen about her employment-related claims. That's
well. Let's. I understand that point, but let's look at the district court's order, if you have that with
you. Yep, I do.
Page 5 of its order, there's a paragraph at the top that starts in summary.
Yep.
And it states that CBS conducted business with MIS. Would you agree with that? Is that?
No, I don't agree with that. I think there was one check that went from CBS to MIS, but this wasn't, they weren't building the project for MIS. There was, other than this singular check that I had nothing to do with, there was no relationship.
Wasn't CBS the general contractor on the RSH project?
Yes.
So you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm just trying to get a sense of whether the facts that the district court is relying on in this paragraph to basically conclude that the representation involves the same transaction, whether you're disputing any of those facts. Because I don't see that in your brief, but correct me if I'm wrong.
What I argued in my brief and what I'm arguing today is that there's a lack of the question is not whether the two claims are closely connected. The question is whether my representation of her is substantially related to the prior representation. And when you look at that paragraph, what the district court relied upon, setting up MIS is not at issue. A potential witness is insufficient. It's got to be a necessary witness. There's nothing in the record. Nobody alleged that I have any information related to how this investment was financed. Nobody, not Ms. Hansen, not Mr. Bestial, nobody. That was something that was concocted during oral argument by Mr. Austinson. That's missing from the declarations. That's not a fact. That's an argument. And there is no fact in the district court's order that any representation related to her had anything to do with her now employment claims against CBS. That's a missing fact. And if the court is...
The language of the rule requires that, or not, the language of the rule states that matters are substantially related, this is in the comment rather, comment 3, if they involve the same transaction. And I think that analysis on page 5 goes to whether they involve the same transaction.
But her employment-related claims against CBS don't involve this transaction. They don't involve how it was set up. They don't involve how it was financed. She separately says that she wasn't paid a commission once the project was finished. That was long after this singular May 4th, 2017 call. It's not the same transaction, Your Honor. And what I would ask, if this court is going to affirm the district court, I would ask that it be a published decision because I think it rewrites the conflict analysis law as it relates to 1.9 and 3.7, because that's not what the law is right now. The law is it's got to be substantially related transaction, and there are no facts in the record that show that I had anything to do with any of her employment-related claims or that she sought any advice related to them.
Well, I agree with you that the law is that they have to be substantially related, and I wasn't suggesting anything other than that.
And I'd, when you look at the record as a whole, her declaration most specifically, and the facts that the district court found, and more importantly did not find, that piece is missing. There is no connection between the representation and her employment-related claims against CBS. None. In fact, there's no connection as it relates to this one paragraph on Addendum 5. It's anything that I did here. She doesn't make any claim related to setting up MIS. She doesn't say it shouldn't have been set up. She doesn't say she shouldn't have been gifted.
Mr. Schwartz, isn't that essentially the same argument that can be made regarding the representation of Mr. Bestial?
I don't think so because they're separate and distinct entities. And when the... I know my time's up, so may I finish that answer?
You may, okay. Please.
When you look at the prayer for relief in the amended complaint, and I looked at it while Mr. Moore was arguing, she separately and distinctly sets forth which claim she's seeking damages for against CBS, which claim she's seeking damages for against Mr. Bestial. They're different claims. Yes, she has asserted two claims in which she lumps them together, but she didn't provide services to Mr. Bestial individually. Those are all related to employment-related claims to CBS, not to Mr. Bestial in some undocumented relationship that there's not an employment agreement governing it.
Okay.
So I think they're separate and distinct, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much to both counsel for your helpful arguments here today. The matter is submitted, and we will issue our decision within the statutory time frame.